It reminds me of a story of a dad coming home and wanting just some time out. I mean, everyone ever get home from work and just say, I just need 5 minutes. Man, give me 5 minutes. The trick is you do that down the street. And you pray, Lord, help me to fill me up that I can give my family firsts. Well, this guy didn't do that. He's sitting home. He just wants 5 minutes. And his boy comes up. Hey, Dad, can we play? Sure, son, give me 5 minutes. I just want to read a little bit of the newspaper. And come on, Dad, come on, Dad. And so the dad's just like, he wants a little bit of time. So he grabs the newspaper, and there's this picture of world peace or something. There's a big old globe there. And so he says, I'll give myself a half an hour. And he tears it in pieces and says, here, put this puzzle back together and put the world back together. And the little boy's like, okay. And the dad's like, woo-hoo-hoo, I got myself some time. 2 minutes later, the boy comes back, all taped together. There's the world. And he's like, how did you put the world back together again? He goes, well, on the back side is a picture of Jesus. And when I focus on Jesus, the world seems to fall back into place again. And when I focus my life on Jesus, all of those other things that seem to be failing really solidify. We've been going through the book of Esther, and we've seen just that, how God just seems to kind of, in his sovereignty, work all things together for good. And though God's name's not declared in this book, we're going to see God's handiwork and the face of Christ through every page of this book. We've seen that King Ahasuerus was first introduced. He was a king that gave a big party for his men. Then he invited his wife. No, he ordered his wife to come and to display her beauty in front of all these guys. And she said, not happening. And he ordered her to no longer be queen. And then we see the introduction of Esther, this daughter or this niece of Mordecai. And she is she's Jewish, and actually her name is Hadassah, and she becomes queen just by the sovereignty of God. And then at the same time, there's this guy by the name of Haman. And when every time I say the words Haman, you, oh, that guy, that bad guy. And he can't stand Mordecai because Haman was brought up to this high seat, and every time he'd walk by, people would tremble with fear and bow down to Haman, but not Mordecai. Mordecai just looked at him as another man. Well, Haman couldn't stand it, and so through pomp and circumstance, he got the king to stamp of approval. We're going to go ahead and get rid of every man, woman, and child of the line of Abraham, every Jew. Throughout the provinces, 127 provinces, all of them. Well, as we read, Mordecai was distressed. He had sackcloth on. And Esther in the palace didn't know what was going on. And so she asks for word, and Mordecai sends word. The king is okay today for all the Jews to be annihilated. All of us, Esther. Go and talk to the king, your husband. And she says, hey, there's only one rule for those who aren't called into the inner court. It's death. Unless he extends that golden scepter, you're dead. Nobody just comes in to see the king. And I haven't been called for 30 days. And you know the story. You know what he says. He says, don't think in your heart that you're going to escape if you remain silent. But know this for certain. That deliverance will come. I love the faith of Mordecai. Deliverance will come, but you and your father's house will perish. But who knows? Maybe you were brought into the kingdom for such a time as this. Isn't that great? We're always shaken about what's going on. Could it be that we're here for such a time as this? You read the articles in the paper, and And honestly, I think we're here for such a time as this. And finally, Esther says, I will go. It might cost me my life. Whether I perish, but I will go. Fast for me. And then we looked at last week that she went before the king. And there were three things. At first, there was fasting. Prayer and fasting. Though the word prayer is not there, it's implied. This is bigger than I am. And before I even take a step forward, I need to pray. I need you to pray for me. We talked about praying for one another. And then the second point we looked at last week was, remember who you are and where you are. And we talked about the whole thing about appropriateness. There should be a sense of awe in the person and in the place and even in the apparel, because she was going to the royal throne in the royal house. And so she put on her royal robe to approach the king. And then we talked about giving room for the Holy Spirit, because as she walked in, he saw his wife and he said, "Queen Esther," and he extends the golden scepter. It's like a good movie, you know. You should make one. And she touches the tip and he says, "What can I give you? What do you want? Up to half my kingdom." And she says, "Well, if I found favor in your eyes, and if it pleases the king, you and Haman come to the banquet that I've prepared for you." And he's like, "Is it tri-tip?" And right then and there, he orders Haman to be brought in, and they go to the banquet, and everything is great. And then he says, "Queen Esther, I'm here. Beautiful spread you have. What is it that you want?" And she says, "Well, if it pleases the king, and if I've found favor in your eyes, would you and Haman come back again tomorrow? And tomorrow I'll have another banquet, and tomorrow I will tell you what my request is. Come back tomorrow." And she's, as we were looking last week, we talked about it wasn't the right place or the right time, and she was yielding for the Spirit, just kind of walking by the way he's leading her, but listening. And moving. And we're going to see today how God, who's working all things together for good, his timing, his plan, how this little circumstance here and this little circumstance here really are all gathered together for a great crescendo. I love it when God intervenes in our lives. I was reading an article, and three things it says: that God's intervention is promised. God promises to intervene. And actually, Mordecai knew that. He said, "My deliverer is coming." Well, he didn't say it like that, but he said, "Deliverance will come." He knew that God was going to deliver his people. He knew that. God's intervention is also with purpose, even if we don't see it. He said, "Who knows? You might be here for such a time as this. I have to yield to the fact that the Lord's at work. I have to yield. There's purpose behind this." And sometimes things go in our life and we can't see what's going on. But the just lives by faith. We walk by faith. We live by faith, not by sight. And then finally, God's intervention is progressive. And we see it building upon building upon building. And so today we're going to be looking at three points. And we're going to be looking at, first point is going to be that bad company corrupts good morals. Join me as we look at chapter 5. We're going to finish the second half of chapter 5 here. Haman is coming back from this party. And it says in verse 9, "So Haman went out that day joyful, and his heart was glad, and his stomach was full. But when Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate, and that he did not stand or tremble before him, he was filled with indignation," you could underline that, "against Mordecai. Nevertheless, Haman restrained himself and went home and sent and called for his friends and his wife Zeresh. Then Haman told them of his great riches, the multitude of his children, everything in which the king had promoted him, and how he had advanced him above the officials and the servants of the king. Moreover, Haman said, 'Besides, Queen Esther invited me, no one but me, to come in with the king to the banquet that she prepared. And tomorrow, I am again invited by her alone with the king. Yet all this avails me nothing, so long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate.' Then his wife Zeresh and all his friends said to him, 'Let gallows be made 50 cubits high in the morning. Suggest to the king that Mordecai be hanged on it. Then go merrily with the king to the banquet.' And the thing pleased Haman, so he had the gallows made." bad company corrupts good morals, or bad company corrupts good habits. The first thing, the line I told you to circle, underline, is indignation. Same word we see for wrath. Haman is filled with wrath that turns to malice, that underlying anger. You look at that word malice, go ahead and Google it, not now, but later. Willing, wanting, desiring to hurt. I am going to get that man. I wonder if Haman had TMJ, you know? And the thing is we laugh, but six times in the New Testament, we're cautioned about malice. Be careful about malice. Be careful about being so angry all the time. He who walks with wise men will be wise, but the company of fools will suffer harm. Be careful with malice. Be careful with the people that you hang out with. It's better to be alone than to be in the wrong company. Tell me who your best friends are, and I'll tell you who you are. A mirror reflects a man's face, but what he really is shown by the kinds of friends he chooses. Be careful. Be careful with the friends that you keep. Be careful. Who is influencing who? I don't know if Haman has influenced his wife and his friends, or if his friends have influenced him. But was Haman always a creepo? I don't know. But what I do know is he has this underlying anger problem that's turned to malice. And it never goes away. He wakes up angry. He goes to sleep angry. He's always angry. And sometimes we can surround ourselves with people who are angry. Or if we're not careful, we corrupt people who aren't angry. Be careful. Bad company corrupts good morals. You see, your best friend should bring out your best, not your worst. I'm reminded of 1 Kings 21, as I look at this gal, Zeresh. What interesting comments she has. Hey, I like what I like. Look what she says. Let gallows be made and hang him on it. In the morning, go talk to the king and then go have dinner. Just get rid of him. Who says that? Who says that? But in 1 Kings 21, you might remember a guy by the name of Naboth. He had a vineyard. And King Ahab kind of wanted that vineyard. And it went from generation to generation to generation. And really, it was more sentimental value than anything else. And King Ahab said, hey, I will give you 10 vineyards. What do you want, money? I'll give you money. I want your vineyard. And he says, you can't touch this. This has been in the family for years. You can't have it. And so then King Ahab goes back home and he's sad because he can't have the garden. He wants his vineyard and he's so upset. And his wife, you might have heard of her, her name's Jezebel. And Jezebel says, why is the king so upset? And he goes, Naboth won't sell me his vineyard. I can't stand Naboth. I have all this stuff, but it avails me nothing if I can't have Naboth's vineyard. Here we see Haman have all these things. The word says he has 10 sons. He's been elevated to this, to the prime minister, and it avails him to nothing if he can't have Mordecai killed. Anyhow, Jezebel orders the town to bring lies against Naboth. And then finally, after Naboth is dead, she presents her husband, you're the king. You should have this. And here's your vineyard. And he's so happy because he has his vineyard. Be careful about the company you keep. Be careful how you keep your company. You see, bad company corrupts good morals. And here we see this man blinded by his own pride, that all he could see is death. I find it interesting that the earmarks of God is his timing. Have you ever noticed that? I mean, every time you can get ready to do something, Lord, I've been praying about this, I've been praying about that, and all of a sudden, boom, something happens that totally points to that. Here in chapter 6, it says in verses 1 through 6, that night, the king could not sleep. Isn't that interesting? The same night that Haman wants to have Mordecai killed, the king can't sleep. So one was commanded to bring the book of the records of the Chronicles, and they were read before the king, and it was found written in that Mordecai had told of Bigtha and Teresh, two of the king's eunuchs, the doorkeepers who had sought to lay hands on King Ahasuerus. And the king said, "What honor or dignity has been bestowed on Mordecai for this?" And the king's servant who attended him said, "Nothing's been done for him." So the king said, well, who's in the outer court?" So here it is, the same night, call it coincidence, call it circumstance, or call it all things are working together for good. The king can't sleep. Haman's at home plotting this gallows that he's making, and the king can't sleep, and Haman's thinking about killing Mordecai. And finally, the king says, "Bring me the books." And Mordecai, that's right. It was Mordecai who warned us. What did we do for him? We've got to honor the guy. Man, he saved my life. Well, nothing's been done. And in this time, a king would call one of the princes and get counsel and get some instruction on what would be best to do. And so he called, and who's in the outer court? Well, wouldn't you know it? Haman's the outer court. Why is Haman there? He wants permission so he can do what? He can kill Mordecai. Isn't this you can't just write this stuff. Well, somebody did, but it was the Lord. Now, Haman had just entered the outer court of the king, verse 4, into the king's palace to suggest that the king hang Mordecai on the gallows that he had prepared for him. Now, let's just stop for a second. If you want to put a question mark or an asterisk, that word gallows literally just means tree or spike or pole. Because we're really not sure if they made, like, anyone ever play hangman? You know, you get the little cross thing, and then you can't get the word, so you put a head, then you put the body. You get the point. You get the point. Really, what most scholars believe is it was a pole that they would impale people on. And so he put up a 50-foot pole, or 75-foot pole with 50 cubits, this big pole in the ground. And there he wanted to hang Mordecai or to impale Mordecai on. And the king's servant said to him, "Well, Haman's out there. He's standing in the court." And the king said, "Let him come in." This is great. I love it. So Haman came into the king, asked him, "What should be done to the man who the king delights to honor?" And you could almost see, you know, bloop, 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 this thinking. The king's going, "Oh, I'd really like to honor Mordecai." And then over here, bloop, bloop, bloop. "He wants to honor me? Oh, oh." And it even says that. "What shall be done for the man the king delights to honor?" Now, Haman thought in his heart, "Whom would the king delight to honor more than moi?" And Haman answered the king, "For the man whom the king delights to honor," just get this, "let a royal robe be brought which the king has worn, and a horse on which the king has ridden, which has the royal crest or crown placed on its head. Then let his robe and the horse be delivered to the hand of one of the king's most noble princes, that he may array the man whom the king delights to honor. Then parade him," yeah, "parade him on horseback throughout the city square and proclaim, 'Thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delights to honor.'" I mean, it keeps going and going and going and going. I think it's interesting that the earmarks of God is so interesting. In Genesis 37, we read how Joseph had these dreams, and then somehow he got into slavery, but it was just for such a time as that Israel would be saved because of Joseph. Or what about Ruth and how Elimelech took his family over to Moab, and Naomi would have one daughter-in-law who would say, "Your people would be my people. Where you die, I will die. Your God will be my God." And whose field would she just so happen to go and glean from but Boaz's field? Isn't that wonderful? I love God's timing. Or what about Daniel? chapter 9 when he's reading Jeremiah and he realizes that 70 weeks are up, or 70 years, and oh, wow. And the Lord sends Gabriel and says, I don't want to talk to you about 70 years. I want to talk to you about 70 weeks. I want to talk to you about the day the Messiah is going to come, to the very day we read. I mean, the timing of the Lord is amazing. Perfect. It's perfect. I was telling Jeff, I was running late last night, and so I didn't get into my morning read. And so after we set up, I went to the beach to do my morning read, because in the back there, we've got these year Bibles. And if you get in the Word every day, it's just amazing. Anyhow, the very word that I have here, my notes about the Lord's timing, was part of the read in John 11. Here, it's told to Jesus that Lazarus is sick. Remember Lazarus? The brother of Mary and Martha. Well, he's sick, and it's unto death. And because he loved Lazarus, doing what Jesus did, he delayed. And then he goes, and now Martha's upset. Lord, had you been here, my brother would be alive. But you know, the Lord's timing's perfect. And he did this because he wanted to fulfill something bigger than healing the sick. And he's done that. He's healed the sick. But he desired to do something for Lazarus that only he could do. He wanted to bring him up from the dead. He wanted to be able to look at Martha and say, Martha, I am the resurrection. Do you believe this? Whoever believes this, though he die, he shall live. God's timing's perfect. He delays when we think we should run. And at times he runs when we think that he should delay. I love this. And like Mordecai, sometimes it's been years since he told the king about Bigtha and what's his face. It's been years. Nobody knew about it. But at the right time, the king read about it. And you might be sitting here today saying, you know what? No one's ever thanked me or acknowledged the fact back in 2001 when I did this. And you might be saying, hey, nobody noticed. I was never compensated. I was never rewarded. And could it be that the Lord is wanting, like Mordecai, like Lazarus, to do something so great in your life that he just says, just wait. Wait upon the Lord. Wait upon the Lord. He wants to renew your strength. Would you wait upon the Lord? Maybe he's got something so great. The story that he's putting together is going to be grand. And if we wait just a little bit longer, he gets all the glory. And then he shares it with us, doesn't he? Doesn't he? Give time for the Lord to work. Don't be worried about how things are working out, and don't be worried about whether people notice, because it's being recorded. God knows. And then here, in this third part here, I've got pride goes before destruction. And we started to read that how Haman, oh man, Haman just knows that this is going to be about him. And Haman knows, oh, I get to ride on the horse. Oh, and he's suggesting to the king, isn't that guy just crazy? Well, what do you want, Haman? I want to be like the king. You know what? I just want to be king. I want to be king. Put me in a robe. Put me on the horse. Oh, I want the crown. I want to taste the glory. He wants the parade. Oh, so don't we want the parade? The accolades, the acknowledgments. Verse 11, then Haman, verse 10. Then the king said to Haman, hurry, get the robe and the horse, everything you've suggested, and do to Mordecai. I mean, come on. Just as you suggested, give to Mordecai the Jew who sits within the king's gate. I find it interesting. Remember, nobody knew he was a Jew. The king knew. The king knows. The king knows your secrets. Just know that. So Haman took the robe and the horse, arrayed Mordecai, and led him on the horseback through the city square, and proclaimed before him, "Thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delights to honor." Man, it is so much better to walk in humility than to be humiliated. Humble yourself in the sight of the Lord, and he will lift you up. Humble yourself. Afterward, Mordecai went back to the king's gate, but Haman hurried to his house, mourning with his head covered. When Haman told his wife Zeresh and all his friends everything that had happened to him, his wise men and his wife Zeresh said to him, "Oh, if Mordecai, before whom you have begun to fall, is of Jewish descent, you will not prevail against him, but you will surely fall before him." What a prophetic word. While they were still talking with him, the king's eunuchs came and hastened to bring Haman to the banquet which Esther had prepared. I mean, it doesn't get better than this. The story gets thicker and the plot gets thicker. And can I just say, I was reading in Isaiah 14, you can read it in Ezekiel 26, how the enemy, before he was the enemy, he was this cherub. Exalted cherub. His hands were tambrels or tambourines. His throat was a pipe organ. He was a worship leader for the myriads of angels. And he led worship until one day iniquity was found in his heart. And he didn't say, "I'm going to beat God." He said, "I will ascend into heaven and I will exalt my throne and I will sit on the mount and I will be like the Most High. I want to wear the robe. I want the parade. Would you just acknowledge me?" To the point where he says, "I'll give you anything you want, Jesus. Anything. Just bow down before me." And Jesus says, "Not so. It is written, thou shalt worship the Lord your God only." And the enemy departed from him, looking for another opportune time. You see, the enemy's not patient, but he's persistent. He'll leave. It says, submit to God and resist the devil and he'll flee. He doesn't have the patience to hang in, but he'll come back. He'll come back. That's why we need to be patient. Haman wants to be like the king. He wants everything. And the Talmud actually says that the king had a dream. And the dream that he had was all of this laid out before him. That he dreamt that Haman would come and ask permission to kill Mordecai. And that he wanted to be arrayed in all these things. And the Lord told him, "Well, just ask him what to do for the guy that you want to honor, and Haman will tell you his true heart." Now that, the word doesn't say that. That's in the Talmud. But isn't that interesting? Haman so desperately wants to be number one. I love the little films that we've been watching at the men's group, and they've got these things. It's called I Am Second. Has anyone ever seen those? It's got these guys that have made it, whatever made it means. They're successful in the world's eyes. How's that? And then they share their testimony, how God met them, God delivered them. And at the end, they'll say something like, I'm David Lucas, and I'm second. Not second as the stopwatch, but second, like, I'm not number one. He's number one. I'm not number one. You see, pride blinds. It blinded Haman that he couldn't see the beauty in others. All he saw in Mordecai was that he didn't bow down. He didn't see the beauty of the heritage that he had, the beauty of his what God's doing. He's so focused on himself, he can't see other people. Just sees a sea of faces, but no one in particular. Pride blinds. he couldn't see the beauty of the blessing. He had 10 sons. He was promoted. He truly was living in the blessing of this day, but pride blinded him to even recognize where he's at. Guys, do you recognize that you're living in the blessing? If you've asked Christ into your heart, you know what? This is worse, as bad as ever going to get. You are living in the blessing right now. Just stop and consider that. Pride blinds to see the beauty of God's provision over selfish ambition. He had the audacity to go to the king to ask permission to impale Mordecai. He had the audacity to go to the king and say, I want to be king. Give me your robe. Pride blinds. Pride blinds us from really seeing anything. I was listening to John Corson as he was talking about Samson. Oh man, am I off again? There it is. Samson, the Nazarite from birth. Samson was to be the deliverer, a judge, and everything was self-centered with Samson. And then he met that girl, Delilah. Did I tell you I met a Delilah lately? You just don't hear that name very often, do you? I know. I remember she was a little girl out in the playground right out there. I said, oh, what's your name? And her mom goes, this is Delilah. And I just thought, would you like to come to church on Sunday? I'd love to invite you to our church. What's in a name? Everything. Samson succumbed to allowing Delilah to cut his hair. And then the Philistines came. The enemy, it says the enemy blinds, binds, and grinds. Sin blinds you to the reality of the truth. You can't even see it anymore. Like Haman, no longer could see the beauty in other people. No longer could he see that he was living in the blessing. No longer could see that his ambition was faulty because it was all about himself. He was blinded to it. And then it says that they took him with iron fetters and they bound Samson. And sin binds us, doesn't it? You think that you're playing with this little toy monkey until it grows up into a gorilla and throws you down. No longer are you having fun with it anymore, but you're enslaved to it. And sin grinds, and the story goes on how Samson was, he grinded the wheel, he pushed the wheel of the grinder, and that's what he did day in and day out, and sin just grinds you to nothing. You're no longer identified but by the misery. Be careful with pride. Be so careful with it. Haman blew it. I want to take this airplane out of a nosedive and bring it back up. So let's just take a quick minute. We're going to turn our Bibles over to Luke chapter 19, please. And we're going to just close that off. We're in Luke 19. We're going to just look verses 1 through 10. You might know this story. I love this guy because he reminds me of, well, he's got this tall stature about him. His name's Zacchaeus. Verse 19, it says, then Jesus entered and passed through Jericho. And behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus who was a chief tax collector. He's the prime minister of the tax collectors. And he was rich. And if you know how to get rich by collecting taxes, that means you're taking more than you should be taking. That's how they were being paid. They were called to take taxes for Rome, and the money that you take over and above is your salary. But he's rich, which means that he was taking far more than he should have. And he sought to see Jesus. He sought to see who Jesus was, but could not because of the crowd, for he was a very tall man. Excuse me, he's a short stature. So he ran ahead and climbed up a sycamore tree to see him, for he was going to pass that way. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and saw him and said, Zacchaeus, Make haste and come down, for today I must stay at your house. Isn't that interesting? Jesus points to the sinner. Hey, I'm talking to you. And today he might be talking to you. And so he made haste and came down and received him joyfully. But when they saw it, they being the Pharisees, they all complained, saying, he's gone to be a guest with a man who's a sinner. Then Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, look, Lord, I give half of my goods to the poor. And if I have taken anything from anyone by false accusation, I restore fourfold. And Jesus said to him, today salvation has come to this house, because he is also a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man has not come, for the Son of Man has come to seek and save that which was lost. Zacchaeus, like Haman, was chief. No longer striving, no longer stealing. He repented and said, you know what? I had to put Jesus first. And when I put Jesus together, the whole world kind of seems to fall into place. And Zacchaeus says, I can't do this anymore. I can't cheat on my taxes anymore. I can't watch that anymore. I can't do this anymore. Why? Because joy filled his heart. Because love came to town. Because salvation fell into his house. He recognized who Jesus was. We learned an interesting phrase yesterday. When the real you surrenders to the real Jesus, you have real peace, real joy, real salvation. But so many times, it's not the real me. It's the mask. How are you doing? I'm fine. Everything's good. Ask somebody else. But Jesus says, Zacchaeus, I want to talk to you. And the Lord is here wanting to talk to one of you about something. Maybe he's talking to me. And he wants to fill your house with joy again. And here Zacchaeus says, Lord, I give it all back. I give half my riches to the poor, and I fill everybody out. I take fourfold I give to those I've ripped off. What a guy. What a guy. Joy and salvation filled his house. I want to remind you of three things. Because bad company corrupts good morals, would you be careful about malice and be careful about your friends? Don't let the sun go down on your anger. You see, because timing is the earmark of the Lord, don't take shortcuts. Wait it out. Like Mordecai, like Lazarus, maybe the Lord is working all things together for a greater good in your life. Wait upon the Lord that he'd renew your strength. And because pride goes before destruction, you know what? Just be careful about pride. Be careful about wanting to be anything. Those who would save their life will lose it, but those who will lose their life for his name will find it. We'll find it. The word repent comes to my mind. I think I can hear Peter right now talking to a big crowd, and he said, repent that times of refreshing would come from the presence of the Lord. If you need to turn away from something, turn away from it that times of refreshing will come from the presence of the Lord. Pastor Dave doesn't realize he's talking to the church. You know, repentance is for the believer as well as the unbeliever. Because it's so easy to kind of take that second look when you shouldn't. It's so easy to just accept what you shouldn't. It's so, we're prone to it, aren't we?